Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, this is the Horticulture Week podcast. I'm Matthew Appleby, and today I'm with Adrian Wickham, Glendale Corporate Development Director, and Tessa Johnston, Johnston Landscapes Director. Both are barley directors and are working in new roles on diversity and inclusion for the association. So, starting with Adrian. Hi there, Adrian, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you, very well.
Excellent. Now, I'm just going to ask you how you got into the industry.
Purely by accident, actually. I was studying at college, doing a business course, and it came to the summer holidays as I came to the end of it, and I wanted a job and needed a job. So I joined an agency, and the agency sent me to a contractor borough to do landscaping. In fact, it was they said it was digging some holes. And as I joined the company, it was in Bracknell, it was actually doing some hard landscaping and landscape design and construction. So it was using big boys' toys, I'd say, re-landscaping our new housing estate. And it's just something I fell into and absolutely loved. I had a really good team leader at the time, Charge Hand, back then we used to call him. So I got into it and haven't looked back since.
Haven't looked back since. Brilliant. And what about you, Tessa? How did you get into the industry?
So to me, it wasn't a natural fit straight away. My background was 10 years in London, in the city. I've always done PA work, so personal assistant work. And I then moved to Wiltshire out of London and joined the National Trust, which was 10 fantastic years running the executive office of the National Trust. And I loved it because the organisation is just a really inclusive place and we were allowed to get involved with anything we wanted to. And after 10 years, actually, my boss left. And although I could have gone off and done something else in the trust, I sort of felt it was the right time, was a natural break. My husband ran a landscaping company, which is the one that I now partner him with. I'd never really shown any interest in it, and I feel a bit bad about that now. I loved what he did. I loved seeing the creation of the domestic gardens, the private projects. But I only ever really looked at the final photos and, you know, said, well done, that's great. But we then decided, you know, what was I going to do? Was I going to carry on doing PA work, or could I help him grow the business in some way? So actually I joined the business about 5 years ago. And really what we've tried to do is just grow how he always wanted the business to grow. I.e., he wasn't 100%, you know, interested in the business side of it, but he loved the sustainability side of it, the environmental side of it. And also he's always been really into growing people who are in the business. And I've really enjoyed that. So I sort of fell into it as well in a way. And I think that's one of the things about landscaping. A lot of people don't set out to join landscaping. It perhaps isn't an aspirational industry. And I think that's rather sad. And I think that's one of the things that Adrian and I are really trying to look at is there's such variety in the industry, and there are so many different areas to it. So that's why I'm, you know, staying involved and loving being involved with Barley.
Well, that's two really interesting and diverse ways that you two got into landscaping. And today we are talking about the situation for diversity in landscaping. So, Adrian, what do you think the situation is in that area? Where are we at the moment?
Well, I feel that, and Tessa certainly alluded to it, and it's certainly our stories, is that we weren't able to quite easily walk into the industry. For me, it was purely accidental, but I think that it's the same with any industry and wherever you are. I was really fortunate to have somebody a number of people actually throughout my career, to put their arms around my shoulders, to guide me, to have trust in me, to develop me, and take me forward. They had trust in me, and for me, it was very important for me to give that trust back or repay them for that trust. And I was able, particularly with Glendale, to go through the ranks, to learn an awful lot. But again, I was very fortunate to have good guidance. And I think that's probably where we are today, is that it doesn't seem that it's an easy and very accessible industry, because it can feel sometimes maybe elitist, perhaps, in some people's views. Some people may not want to, may be coming into it through a change of career, and wondering how to get into it, certainly from schools. So I think at the moment, I think we really do need to perhaps open it up to diverse people and diverse groups, and show them how to quite easily come into the industry. I think the other thing is certainly about us finding people to mentor, people to grow and support. And I certainly want to do that in the way that I was supported in the industry myself.
Yeah, brilliant. And what about you, Tessa? What's your take on this question about entry points into the industry?
I think rather sadly that landscaping has always been one of those industries that's perhaps perceived as somebody who hasn't got a great set of qualifications or skill set. And I think construction at that entry level can be looked at in the same way. And actually what I've seen from joining my husband's business is there is so much you can get involved with. And the team that we have, which sadly at the moment are all guys, but they're all great guys. We've had females working for us. But just at the moment, our team is all male. It's very easy to assume that they just want to come in and build a garden and go home and not really have huge aspirations. But actually, once I sit down and bother to talk to any of them, they've all got aspirations. They all want to do something different. And in order to accommodate that, we've really changed the structure of our business. And I think a lot of landscaping businesses have. You know, the ones that I talk to, they're certainly not Jurassic anymore. They're much more dynamic. When I talk to the guys and girls on the Barley board, their businesses have got really interesting models, and they are all looking at apprenticeships. We've got two apprentices at the moment, and I won't stop that process. I will always do the apprenticeship process. What we try and do a little bit differently is, if somebody comes in on either a government scheme or just at that entry level, is we don't pay the national minimum wage. I don't agree with that. So we will, we'll try and match it and up it and make sure that they're valued for what they're bringing to the company. So I think what we really want to do is just change people's perception. There is so much you can get involved with. There are so many different areas. If you can look at it as a very simple going out and working for the day and going home, or you can have the whole picture. You want to create something, you want a legacy, you want to build something. And I think a lot of the businesses are now more interested in making the access easier for more people.
Oh, well, I remember in November 2020, Tessa, we wrote a piece on for International Women's Day on 100 leading women in horticulture, and we included you. You mentioned, the industry is quite male dominated. Do you think there is a lack of women leaders in horticulture?
I don't have any data, so it would be wrong for me to say how many or to guess how many women are leading things. I think there are plenty of female business owners. Are they do they put themselves out there and shout about it? No, I think perhaps as a generalistic comment, we're not as good at shouting our corner. So we tend to, and this again, it's a very generalistic comment, but we tend to not perhaps enter awards. We tend to worry a bit more that if we're not doing something really, really well, we won't shout about it yet. I'm really guilty of that. I quite like sitting behind other people and promoting other people. It's something I've always done. When I did PA work, I was always the support mechanism. That's just the route I chose. But on a day-to-day basis, I still do talk to a lot of other women. And the thing to me that's more important is I'm not working around a bunch of guys who are sexist and who don't want us to be involved. One of the reasons I've loved the industry and love being involved in Bali is I've found everybody really inclusive. You know, one of the reasons I joined the board at Bali is because for some strange reason, I was rebuilding our website and I wanted the website to function in a particular way. And I ended up finding somebody else's website online, and it happened to be a company which is owned by Paul Downer, who's one of the other board Bali directors. I didn't know him. I'd never heard of him. But I phoned him and I just said, you know, I'm trying to do this with the business and I don't know how to do it. And your website seems to support that you are already doing this. And he spent an hour with me on the phone, you know, and he's a really busy person. And he spent an hour on the phone talking me through, mentoring me really in that 1 hour. And it was invaluable. And at no point did he scoff and say, yeah, you're female, you know, forget it, go away. I found it a really inclusive industry. I just think we're not being vocal enough about it. So I've been, you know, completely welcomed by everybody. I love it.
No, that's a great example of the industry working together. Now, Adrian, in 2019, some research which Bali was involved in found the horticulture industry could be worth 50% more than the current 24 billion if the skills gap is filled. But how bad do you think the skills gap is, and how can it be filled?
I think the skills gap does seem to be widening. There seems to be a lot less people coming into the industry. But I think the way to resolve it is by being far more diverse, and us as an industry trying to attract people from different backgrounds, if it's different religious backgrounds, if it's people that are with disabilities or mental health or different religion, we need to attract these people in to fill that gap. We really do need to promote the industry a little bit more, make it a little bit more sexier, shall we say. And perhaps have some really interesting people that people can look at. And, you know, we can go back to the football and people can look at it and say, actually, I could support that team or I could support that industry because there's people in there that I recognise. That's an industry that I'd like to be in, and an organisation that I'd like to work for. So I think that's a fantastic opportunity to fill the gap. But just also put the good work of the industry, because I'm really amazed by how nice and people are, how encouraging people are within the industry. I compete with many, many different companies up and down the country. But it is a very, very friendly environment and a bunch of friendly people that I really draw to them, and I really draw to the industry in that respect.
Oh, great. Now, you two are working on this project for Bali. Can you tell me a bit more about it, just about what exactly you're doing and what you're hoping to achieve?
What are we hoping to achieve? We're trying to put the industry back on the map. We are seeking to, at the end of this year, around December the 2nd, we want to have an event called Access All Areas, where we want to invite a number of people from diverse backgrounds to our meeting, to a round table discussion, really, and let them have access to the industry. It's so varied. There's so many different things that can be done. There's so many people that are scientists, because I believe it's a scientific industry, horticulture. We talk about plant knowledge. We're talking about really quite in depth, if it's plants, if it's trees, shrubberies, bedding, whatever it is, if it's growing these things, it's really, really quite scientific and biological. But then it's also about these people that are creative and can design, and people that can speak, and people that just very visual. So we'd like to invite a roundtable discussion for people to see what they can get into within the industry and what they can be attracted to and potentially what's out there. It's not just about digging holes in the ground, for example. There's a lot more to it as well. And business people, it is a business. It is really, really quite complex. We're talking about purchasing, we're talking about profit and loss and finance. It's a real business. So it's a variety of tasks for a variety of different people that can be attracted to the industry.
You know, that sounds like it's going to be a really good event on the 2nd of December. So Tessa, from your point of view, what's the Bali Diversity Project entail?
Adrian and I really only started working on this towards the beginning of this year, and we've deliberately gone pretty slowly on it because we've seen an awful lot of companies install diversity roles in their business, and we want to make sure we're not paying lip service, that we're doing it because we're interested in it, and definitely, you know, selfishly from my perspective, I want to see more people coming in. I do find it quite difficult to recruit people. So the event in December, which is, I mean, it's pretty much wrapped up, but what we're hoping is that perhaps from this podcast is that if anybody is interested in being involved in the event, we'll have an audience and we'll have people around the table. And we want to have a few different people. We don't want to have the people that we're always hearing from, that we love hearing from, but just anybody else that perhaps feels they've got something to offer. We're really welcome, you know, we'd welcome talking to them. You know, Bali does a lot of work already, but it's perhaps, and it hasn't done it entirely quietly, but the Go Landscape initiative, which sends, you know, we go into a lot of schools, and it's a really busy initiative that's ongoing within Bali. I think they attended around 73-75 careers events between 2019 and 2020 before we all had to sadly shut down. And then behind the scenes during the pandemic, Stephen Ensel, who runs that initiative, is getting ready to go back out, take more ambassadors out into schools, because actually getting to talk to children at around 14, 15, and it's not always easy to do that. There are lots of complications with going into schools, but Stephen's really keen on that initiative. You know, and getting to talk to them at that age to make them understand how exciting the industry is. That's a really powerful thing. So we want to support Go Landscape a lot and to help promote the work they're already doing. And I think out of the event in December, we're going to decide, you know, what will the outcome of that be? We don't want it just to be a chat and then we all leave the room, because people obviously coming to the table are taking time out. But perhaps that outcome can come out of that meeting. We're not quite sure yet. We haven't got there. We've called it Access All Areas because I think that's a really important thing. And I think that's physical access and mental access. We have an exciting event or initiative which will be happening around World Mental Health Day in October, which I'm not announcing right now because it's not out in the public domain. But when we've tied that down in detail, that's going to be another sort of bow to the inclusion side of the work we're trying to do. We're just trying to encourage everyone in all of the membership to perhaps not only look at people that just are like yourself. I've been really guilty in the past when I worked at the National Trust, when I first set up the executive office. I tended to surround myself by people that were just like me, whether that was because they looked like me or were the same education or whatever. And actually, I didn't create a particularly brilliant office. And then I ended up with somebody coming in to run the correspondence side of things. And to be honest, I didn't get on with him very well, but he was absolutely brilliant at his job. And I'm so glad I met him and I'm so glad he joined us. So I think, you know, a lot of the work we want to do is really to get our members to see that, you know, just look a little bit further, perhaps look at some of these wonderful schemes that are out there, things like Kickstart. You know, you can, there's a lot of help out there from the government where you can perhaps help place people that are not going to find it as easy as you or me to walk into a job. And there are initiatives where we can support people, mentor people. Hopefully they would stay with you once they've finished their 6 month placement. And perhaps if they agree that they're not right for you or you're not right for them, we then have a duty of care to ensure that we help them find a role somewhere else. It's just opening the industry up to a wider audience, really. And that will really, really improve the shortage we have with skills. It has to. You know, we all know diversity on any level makes things stronger. It just does.
Yeah, we just want to add for our event in December is that we want to involve the industry. We want to work with other organisations. Although we are Bali and our membership is our most important thing, we also want to work with other organisations around diversity and inclusion. It's something that we feel that we just can't do alone, and the industry must unite on this subject.
Fantastic. Now, you both mentioned mentors a couple of times. So, Adrian, who do you see as your mentors? I mean, now that you're a mentor to other people.
I've had various mentors, which, you know, I'm happy to say here. I've had one gentleman, Craig Davis, who when I first joined, I was in Bracknell and he was my charge hand, and we grew. He later joined Glendale and he said, come and join us, you know, become a supervisor, something that I didn't even consider doing as a business course. I joined and worked my way through the organization. I had other leaders, such as the owner of Glendale, who's unfortunately passed away, Tony Hewitt, was always encouraging. He organized a management program and they put me on. I was the first Glendale employee to be part of this management scheme. A gentleman called Larry Jones, which was a managing director, Andrew Brightman, Richard Burton, Nick Temple-Hild. I've had a number of different people that I've been able to look up to and have spoken at eye level, shall I say, to me and encouraged me in the growth of the organization. Obviously, I had to give back as well, and that was my time, my efforts, and my knowledge as well. So, you know, I've had a number of different people, and I've been very, very, very fortunate. I believe that the words that they said, the letters that they wrote me, just some of the time that they took to speak to me independently, are all the things that I want to do to help and mentor other people, and the lessons that I've learned from them of what that really kept with me.
Now, I've loved listening to you two's plans and perspectives, but have you got any personal, professional future plans, either of you? What about you, Tessa? What's on the horizon?
I think for us, you know, Johnston Landscapes has existed for 30 years, and I admire the business. Now that I've joined it, I see how difficult it is just to make a small business work. You know, I have the same problems that everybody else has. You know, we've got issues at the moment with one staff member, we've got issues with the business model. We all have issues all the time, and really trying to settle with a really good business model is one of my first aims before I even think about growth and bottom line and stuff like that. I want to create a business that actually it's more kind of driven by process and systems, which sounds a bit boring, but it just means everything moves more smoothly. I want to involve the team more. You know, I have two guys who are currently far more involved with the business than they used to be. And they really enjoy the business side. They enjoy winning the business. They enjoy delivering it. We want to grow, but actually we've increased our turnover a huge amount in the last 5 years without growing the team size. We've grown the team though. So we've invested in training with the team. And initially, Andrew would be the first person to say that, you know, he didn't really want to spend that much money on training or investment, but he's absolutely seen the rewards that brings, because all of the team are happier with what they're doing. They have a bigger skill set. If they want to go and work for somebody else, they will find it a lot easier because they have all of their cards and their qualifications. And I want to keep going with that. I want to keep going with making sure I don't buy products that I don't like, as in I don't want to use stone that has come from somewhere where it shouldn't, or that young people have been digging stone up that shouldn't. I want everything to have a provenance. And that's the stuff that we're really working on. You know, it's less about the bottom line in a way. I would love to see the business grow financially as well. That would be an absolute bonus. But I'm genuinely confident that's going to happen when we've got everything else in place.
Great. Thanks, Tessa. And what about you, Adrian? What's your professional plans?
Professional plans is to run and be part of a very successful business. We have some good strategic aims. I want us to be not the biggest in turnover, but I'd certainly want us to be known as one of the most successful companies. I certainly want us to be the employer choice. I want us to have something where employees really talk about working for Glendale and really share that knowledge, and people want to queue up to work for us because we are such a good and pragmatic company. I want us to be technologically ahead. And also for us to be working in lots of different areas. I'd like us to be known as a premier company with lots of different strings to the bow. But one that shows a family business, run business, and certainly a family view of looking after and maintaining their staff.
Great. Now, just to end on a light note, what we always do all week on the podcast is ask what your desert island plant is. So, Tessa, have you got a plant that you'd take to a desert island if you got stuck there? Anything you'd love to be stuck with?
I think I'm slightly concerned that, you know, that the palette of plant is going to be a bit dull or a bit repetitive if I only have the one, but hopefully it will be planted amongst other things. So the plant I suppose I really love, which actually I'm very spoilt. I have a cutting garden which I made at home, which means that I don't have to go out and pay for flowers, which actually I should be more supportive and still use flower shops. But pretty much between June and October, I have this ridiculously blousy cutting garden, which is utterly filled with sweet peas from the beginning of the season, but dahlias, and lots of people don't like dahlias. My husband really doesn't like dahlias, but I love them because they're blousy and showy and you can't help but smile at them. It's a bit like sort of cuddling a puppy. They make you feel really good. And then if I had to take one, I'd probably take a photograph of the dahlias, but I would probably take Bryza media, which is one of the quaking grass, which has these little beautiful, almost heart-shaped seed heads on it, and it turns from green to ivory with a sort of purplish tinge to it. So I'm going to take the grass. I think it's the Bryza.
Okay, a grass, but and a photo of a cuddling a puppy.
Yeah.
And what about you, Adrian?
Oh well, my heritage is from the beautiful island of St. Vincent and the Grenadines, and there's a particular plant that I would like is Annona squamosa, which is called sugar apple. Particularly as I'm on a desert island, I love something to eat as well, but I have a really bad sweet tooth. And this fruit, it looks really peculiar, but when I tasted it, I fell in love with it. And I even try and buy it over in the UK as well. There's a Caribbean shop that I can go to and buy it. So that would be the plant that I would have.
Brilliant, the sugar apple. Okay, well, thanks very much to Tessa and to Adrian, and thanks for listening to the Horticulture Week podcast. I'm Matthew Appleby, and I've been with Adrian Wickham and Tessa Johnston talking about diversity in horticulture and landscaping. Now, make sure you never miss a Horticulture Week podcast. Subscribe to or follow Horticulture Week podcast via Apple iTunes, Spotify, or Google Podcasts, or your preferred podcast platform. So, once again, thank you and goodbye till next time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.